Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello there, and welcome to the Cognitive Recalibration Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Shravan. We've got Taran here with us.
Did that work?
Like the intro? Or?
Yeah.
Do you reckon it worked?
I don't know.
I tried.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was dreaming about it last night. I'm like, how should I start this, you know, podcast? How should I start
with the intro? Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, I thought hello there because...
Oh, okay.
It's the thing that he says.
I see what you did there. Yeah. I had a massive grin on my face.
So today we're going to be talking about Obi-Wan Kenobi, the Disney Plus show. And as usual, whenever we do anything Star Wars, we can't do it without Star Wars expert Bhaskar Cherukuri. So welcome back.
Howdy. How you going?
We're going great. It seems like, because I only just finished editing that Boba Fett episode.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that one, yes. Like 2 weeks ago. And that was a long episode, but it was really detailed. And we went into a lot of... basically a deep dive into everything Star Wars in that episode. So it was really good. So
yeah, it was more a conversation as to the state of Star Wars. And
yeah,
that was a good almost three hour podcast.
Yeah, it was almost 3 hours. And when I we didn't lose a lot when I edited it down. It came down to like 2 hours and 40 minutes or something.
So that was quality stuff.
Yeah. So let's see how we're going today in terms of length. We got a bit to talk about in terms of Obi-Wan as well. It's been a little while since it's been out. I did have to do a bit of a refresher this morning. I watched the recap that they have at the start of the first episode, which is a recap of the prequels. But yeah, I've been just doing a bit of research over the last couple of days. So as usual, we'll do a bit of background on the show. We will do non-spoilers in case someone hasn't seen it yet, but we'll keep it pretty short in terms of non-spoilers. And then we'll spend most of the time doing spoilers and going through each episode and going through our thoughts. A bit of background on the show itself. So unlike The Mandalorian and I'm pretty sure Boba Fett as well, they had different directors for different episodes. This is all directed by Deborah Chow. So all the episodes are directed by Deborah Chow. Obviously, return of Ewan McGregor after the prequels. I just realized this, but Revenge of the Sith came out 2005. So correct. This is 17 years later.
Yeah, it's a while. That is a long time.
But yeah, I mean, he's aged pretty well. He doesn't look that old, so
he doesn't look like Alec Guinness yet.
Yeah.
I feel like the creative team almost waited for Ewan McGregor to kind of look the part of like that halfway between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope, and that, oh, you know what, he looks good now, let's do it.
Yeah, he's come on as a executive producer for this as well, so he was involved in some way in the production side of things. Other producers, Kathleen Kennedy, who's involved in all of the Star Wars products that come out, so all the TV shows and all the movies as well. And then Deborah Chow was also a producer. Other things I wanted to mention, cinematography, Chung Hoon Chung. This person, I didn't realize this, but I looked into his background, and there's a couple of movies that we've seen from him recently. So Last Night in Soho, some very interesting cinematography, was done by him.
Interesting, okay.
They use John Williams' theme. Whenever there's Star Wars related things, they do use his original themes. But in terms of the other compositions for this show, it was by Natalie Holt, and she was involved with the Loki series, also on Disney Plus. Each episode runs between, I think, half an hour to, I think the longest one was about 50 minutes. So they're similar sort of time range that they had for Mandalorian and Boba Fett. And there is 6 episodes. So it's a shorter, I mean, they're doing 6 for most series now, I think, on Disney Plus. We'll get into our thoughts on that. Anything else in terms of background? I did want to, obviously, Obi-Wan, whenever we talk about these characters, we talk about where they first originated, but Obi-Wan originated in the first Star Wars movie. So that was the first time you saw him.
Yes.
So A New Hope is where you first saw him, obviously played by, as you mentioned, Alec Guinness.
Also the creator of Guinness, the world famous drink.
About Star Wars, the first one, apparently
he drank a lot of Guinness while he was on set.
No, well, he took it really seriously, like, because he was like a well-known actor.
He famously hated it though. I think he, when he did it, it was cute. It was this little project that he was helping George Lucas get on the board, and George Lucas was obviously using Alec Guinness's name as a billing actor to kind of get that pull. A bit like, you know, how Stranger Things got Winona Ryder as the bill name, right?
Yeah. Winona Ryder. I mean, and Alec Guinness was, I mean, he was also a renowned, like a classy actor as well. He was like a well established, like if you got someone like who plays Odin?
Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah, someone like that. Yeah, someone of that stature, essentially, playing a character. But then Harrison Ford and the rest of the cast, they were kind of just like fooling around a bit. They were just having a bit of fun.
They were basically kids. Yeah. They were essentially like early 20s, late teens. Like Carrie Fisher was like 16 when she joined.
Yeah, she was very young. Mark Hamill was pretty young as well.
I remember there was another actor, like a very established actor, Peter Cushing, who played Admiral. I forgot his name, but he played the Admiral.
Yeah.
A lot of these established actors kind of helped set the imperial feel of the thing. Obi-Wan was more English, but I think that it was good to have that classical acting bring that gravitas forward. So, yeah, I do remember seeing the interviews where Alec Guinness was talking about the fandom and what Star Wars has become like a cult, and he was like, that wasn't what it was to him.
It brings on the famous tradition of in every trilogy or in every Star Wars movie that's made, most of the actors hate it afterwards.
Interesting. It's surprising to see the feedback. Yeah.
Harrison Ford famously hates anything Star Wars.
Yeah. I think he just doesn't care. Whenever they ask him any questions, it's like, I don't care. It's like, I just don't care about
it. He's almost like too cool for like the whole fandom. Like even before Star Wars became mainstream, like I remember watching it as a kid and thinking, oh, this is an awesome universe. This is an awesome thing. And the people who would come to, you know, movie releases were the fans. There was no Comic Con essentially for movies back then.
Yeah.
Like there was no, the fandom hadn't gotten that far just yet. I think as soon as the prequel trilogy came out, it was kind of, they're not as good as the originals. People hated it. Some people loved it. And then I think the sweet spot was like around 4 to 5 years after Revenge of the Sith, when the Clone Wars came out in 2010. That's when the fandom started again.
And Comic-Con's become much more prominent in the last maybe 10, 15 years. Before that, it wasn't really no one really cared about it that much.
Yeah, it was like George R. R. Martin style people, basically.
But Harrison Ford would never come out to a Comic-Con for Star Wars. Well, he wouldn't do a Comic-Con ever for anything.
He did come to one Star Wars thing. I think when
Force Awakens came out, if you see any interviews where like he's doing an interview for something non-Star Wars related and they ask him for something Star Wars, you're just like, not answering that.
Yeah.
Well, the funny thing is I think he did come out for this one. Obi-Wan Kenobi started the San Diego
Comic-Con. Very recently he came out.
He came out and it was when John Williams was doing his, I think it was his 60th year or 50th year. It was like a Jubilee celebration of his work.
Yeah.
And Harrison Ford came out to honor him as part of his work on Obi-Wan Kenobi. And the crowd went nuts, and it was like because it's a very rare appearance. But that's one of the only times he's ever came out was for Obi-Wan Kenobi.
And the person that's taken over the mantle now is what's his name? He's in the new trilogy.
Adam Driver.
Nah.
John Boyega.
No, very very famous guy.
He's Oscar Isaac.
Oscar Isaac.
Yeah. Oscar Isaac. Yeah.
I think it was for the last movie when they were doing press. they're like, oh, if they want to bring your character back for a Disney Plus series, would you do it? He's like, nope.
He said like they have to pay him like...
No, he said even if they pay him $3 million an episode, he's not doing it.
Interesting.
Yeah. Wow, okay. Yeah. I think, well, yeah, I mean, his character definitely got shafted in that trilogy. Yeah. It started off as being like a really cool character in Force Awakens, and then he just became nothing after that.
Yeah. They had a lot of scope. Yeah.
Anyway, Obi-Wan.
Obi-Wan. Okay. Well, let's talk about it. We can do our non-spoiler thoughts.
Oh, yeah.
And then we'll jump into spoilers. So we'll start off with positives. So I thought, and we can go through a story, and you know what the story is. It's between the prequels and the original trilogy. Yep. So it's whatever happened to Obi-Wan in between that. But basically, positives, I think Ewan McGregor obviously is amazing in this role.
Yeah.
And definitely channels, when you hear him talking normally, he's very different. He's a different person to what he is when he's Obi-Wan. I think he definitely channels that Alec Guinness. Like, he even changes his accent a little bit and like the way, the cadence of his speech as well, he changes. So he definitely channels that character, and he did a great job, I think. And this wouldn't have been as good if it weren't for him. Like, it all centers around his character, obviously, and he brings the performance. So I think Ewan McGregor makes it watchable. Any other positives?
I would say that it's a spiritual successor to the prequels. Like, if you're at all a fan of the, you know, the prequels, and you finished watching Revenge of the Sith, and you thought, oh wow, that was bit of an abrupt turn of events and ending, and it was quite tragic. And it's been 17 years since that came out, so there's no spoiler alerts required. But it was quite a tragic series of events. And Obi-Wan Kenobi, the TV series, kind of takes a wonderful approach to honoring that storytelling, George Lucas's storytelling, and actually literally follows on straight from the memories and the emotions that you're left with.
Yeah,
and it kind of carries on from that. But like Sravan said, it was the focus they've put on his character, Obi-Wan Kenobi's character, and Umar's portrayal. The writing is actually very in-depth for the moments that he's involved in. And it goes through his psyche, and it goes through his processing. And like, you're kind of led to believe, oh, everything's fine, and Obi-Wan Kenobi at the end of Revenge of the Sith just becomes Alec Guinness.
Yeah,
it does. And it's just, that's it. And you hope 19 years later, that gap, he's now this wise master. It's not the case. So they show the struggles he's gone through in that time.
Yeah, I did think this show, I mean, they could have made it really sad. Like, it could have just been this guy in a desert just being sad most of the time. But it's not that. There's other Star Wars stuff happening at the same time, and it's they made it fun. It could have been very serious and sad. But,
oh, yeah. It could be very, very, like, isolated, marooned on a – like, every episode is just him silently praying to some force and not hearing any answer. It could have been that, but – and another positive, they do involve the extended universe. They bring in, from the trailers, and they obviously bring in the Inquisitors, which is a very prominent new force that you see in, or not new force, I guess new enemy combatants that you see in the Fallen Order series, for example, the games from Rebels, Star Wars Rebels, if you're a fan of the animated series. Like, if you've watched those, you'll recognize the same elements here. And also, you see the state of the Empire and you know, the townships and people, and now that the Empire is now in control. What has it been, 10 years since the events of Revenge of the Sith? Is based on?
Yeah. 10 years later, yes.
10 years later. Yeah. So, it's a really interesting place and time to step into.
Yes.
To see what's going on.
No, I think that pretty much covers it. It does flesh out the series a little bit more, especially for people that haven't seen Clone Wars before. I think it's a good stepping stone to flesh out the relationship between Anakin and Obi-Wan, because as much as they're in the prequels a lot together, their relationship is not shown in the prequels that much. They're only just like bickering with each other, or they hate each other. It's never shown as a kind of, it's meant to be an older brother relationship essentially, but it's never really shown in the prequels that much, like maybe in like two or three. There's like,
there are
6 hours of prequel footage, but it's like in like maybe like half an hour that they show their relationship in those movies.
Well, in the first one, it's not really there because he's a kid in that one anyway. And the second one.
In the second one, they just hate each other.
Yeah.
And he's with Padme the whole time.
And in the third one, you do get a little bit. There's some good moments. I do like Revenge of the Sith. I think
it's the best prequel.
Yeah.
It got the balance right.
Yeah. It's actually one of the better Star Wars movies.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, this is a, controversial opinion, but I still love Phantom Menace. Like even
I don't.
Like, like ever since I saw it, I'm like, you know what? It's a kick-ass film. The pacing is a little bit slower, yes, but the pod race scene fixes that.
Pod race goes for way too long, in my opinion.
The only reason why I liked the first one was that there's no romantic subplot, apart from like a 14-year-old trying to flirt with a 14-year-old princess. Like there was no other romantic subplot. And I'm like, you know what? It focuses on politics and the story, which is great. But when it gets to the relationship between Obi-Wan and Anakin, it's brotherly, but it's also a bit like father-son relationship. That's what you see in Attack of the Clones, where it's like someone's trying to control his teenager and he's like, oh, I'm being held back. I just want to let go, which is, I wish they explored that more, like his innate rage or whatever he was battling with. And then you're left with this moment in Revenge of the Sith where it's like, oh, they're really close. They're almost like brothers who love and respect each other. They'll do anything to protect each other. And then it's kind of severed at the very end of that movie. And you don't get a closure. That's why Clone Wars is great, to build all that up.
If you just watch the movies, it's kind of like, yeah, they say they're brothers, but are they? Like they never really do anything brotherly or they're not really on screen that much together.
Even in Revenge of the Sith, because Obi-Wan-
They're always separated.
He goes and does that side quest and then Anakin's talking with Palpatine in the meantime.
When I was thinking about Obi-Wan Kenobi, the TV series, I was not expecting for them to touch on Obi-Wan's thoughts about or memories about his time with Anakin at all. So it's kind of interesting to see them touch on that in this series. That's a great nod to all of the people who are like, oh, Anakin and Obi-Wan had this history and we know what Anakin became. Is Obi-Wan going to even think about that stuff? Is he going to look back or is he going to try and block it out like traumatic memories? So it's really cool to see how they dealt with that.
Saying that though, I didn't love the show. I thought it was good. But I didn't love it. It's not as good as The Mandalorian for me, or it's probably a little bit better than Book of Boba Fett. But yeah, there's flaws to it that I just couldn't get over, basically. I think the overall story was okay, but where you're left at the end felt like where they left at the end of Revenge of the Sith as well. And I'm like, what was actually achieved? There was some character development, but I thought what he got to at the end of Revenge of the Sith was what he got to at the end of this as well, in terms of where he would go. So I thought it was slightly unnecessary because they wanted to do two seasons maybe instead of one. There's a character called Reva in this who I thought her motivations were weird.
Weak.
And didn't make sense most of the time. Especially in the last episode, there's some stuff that she does, which I'm just like, why are you doing this? Like, what is your motivation here? And there is some flaws with the action, which is mainly due to, I think, the use of the volume. Yeah, there's scenes where people are running away from other people.
Yes.
And it looks very bad. And I think it's because they were in the volume and you can't keep running because there's a wall there. So, like, you kind of see people jog around each other and it looks stupid, but I think they were limited to what they had. Some of the action was really good though, but some of it wasn't that good.
I would agree with that. I think some of the action, especially in the first two episodes, there's a lot of chase sequences, I would say, in the first couple of episodes, and they went from, they should have been like suspenseful and oh, what's going to happen, but they almost ended comedic, up being pretty comedic the way, you know, things panned out.
And it was memed on the internet afterwards.
It's funny how they kind of, Ethan's really good at picking out cinematic flaws.
Yeah.
Which is good. I do agree. The tone of the series was, I think they were advertising it, kind of showing it to be going in one direction. And there was a lot of hype around an Obi-Wan series. Like, would it be very, like a pensive series to just talk about like a meditative state of what he's going through? Is it going to be an action-filled series? And it's like, if you're talking about post-Clone Wars, the action's not going to be as intense. It should be something that's like reeling from the effects of war. And so it's interesting to see the direction they took. And I agree, it's not the tone that I would have expected. Some parts were enjoyable. Some parts were just kind of like, I would not have imagined this would be happening at all. Like, you know, like, I mean, it's not that Far Cry to say from the trailer. If I watch the trailer and it's like, Obi-Wan's on another planet after the events of Revenge of the Sith, you're like, okay, that's interesting. I thought it'd just be stuck on Tatooine the whole time.
There was, I don't think this is a spoiler, Leia's in this, and her acting was terrible at the start, but it actually got better as the show went on. And I thought it was all right. Yeah.
So this, if I just watched the first two episodes, this would have been a negative, but it actually ended up being a positive.
Yeah.
Leia's character, because she does grow on you as the show goes on. Definitely the first two episodes, I'm like, she's this continues. It's going to be a little bit hard to watch, but
I don't know what you mean exactly.
Yeah, she got much better, and she does grow on you as a character as the series goes on. So I think that was good. I think she did a good job.
I'm good on them for casting someone age appropriate, like young, like really, like, and it was.
It
very
seemed
talented.
Like she learned how to act while she was on the job. If they filmed it in order, it's probably her first acting role.
Probably.
Well, she did really well, like, towards the end. The start, not so much, but
I was actually looking at her film model just to see if this was her first acting credit. So it's not. She was in Bird Box.
Oh, okay.
Was she the baby or something?
That came out in 2018. How old is she now?
It's probably
she
10.
She's 10.
She's 10.
Yeah, so that was 2018, 4 years ago. So she would have been like 6 in that.
Okay.
Haven't seen Bird Box. So I don't know.
In terms of television, she's been in some shows. So she was in The First Lady this year.
Oh, okay, interesting.
Right. She's the First Lady.
That's a show where they talk, there's like
three. It's about pedophiles.
I thought it was going to be like a girl who's made president at the age of like 6, because it's like they just get sick of all the adults. They just go complete left turn. It's just like, we've got to pick a kid to lead this country.
Little Eleanor Roosevelt in that.
Oh, so, there you go.
But it's about three different wives of presidents.
I remember this one.
So yeah. I think it was like Michelle Obama, Roosevelt, and one other.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, she's got a lot of credits for that age. Who knows?
Yeah.
Like, this is going to propel her career.
She's been in
great.
6 shows, including this one, and she's been in 4 movies.
Wow. Damn. Go get her. I just remember her getting like a really, really warm welcome at like Comic-Con. Like when they called all the actors onto the stage,
yeah,
one by one, it was like they just called Reva's character. Everyone's like, I think Uma McGregor was already on there, and then they finally called Leia's character, and the whole crowd just gave such a warm welcome. It was really wholesome.
Other negatives, I think there's stuff that happens in this show where I feel like it's just very convenient the way they kind of finish up some things. Oh, so there's there's certain people are supposedly dead, but in Star Wars, they're never dead. And then, like, certain things happen where characters escape a situation where they really shouldn't have escaped, but they do because there's 3 more episodes and other stuff has
to happen. I think some of that was to do with the volume as well and how it's filmed. Like, there's parts where people should have died or did die and then they come back and, I agree with that.
Yeah. There's certain things, but we'll get into in spoilers. But overall, I did like the show. I mean, it's not as good as Mandalorian for me as well, but I think it is better than Book of Boba Fett, mainly because it was an Obi-Wan Kenobi show, and it was an Obi-Wan Kenobi show. It was about him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought they did a pretty good overall. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah. I'll probably agree with the ranking there. Definitely. I think it's a must watch for anyone who's watched, who's a Star Wars fan. I'd say, if you're a Star Wars fan, watch this. If you're not a Star Wars fan and you've just seen, like, the prequels, give this a go. If you've not touched Star Wars at all, maybe catch up on the main movies for a bit and then give this a watch. It's definitely one of the more important production value series that is, in essence, like, you could go without watching Mandalorian and not miss anything too heavy.
You could, in this, yeah.
Yeah, like you could go without watching Book of Boba Fett and not miss anything too much. But like I said, I would recommend Book of Boba Fett for any hardcore Star Wars fans because they're like, there's some serious shit that goes down. Likewise, in this one, there's some serious stuff.
This is actually the first show that my wife watched, Star Wars show. So she didn't watch Mandalorian. She just couldn't get into it.
Oh, really?
Boba Fett was like, That was just way too.
That's too left field.
That was way too Star Wars for her. But in this, I think basically because of Leia. I think Leia was like,
interesting point.
Yeah. It was something interesting, and it was a character that other people could relate to, like non-Star Wars people could actually sort of relate to. And so I think potentially it can get a wider audience than some of the other Star Wars shows, this particular one.
Which is very interesting because that, I feel like that was the whole purpose of Grogu in The Mandalorian, to kind of pull that whole fandom, like the other fandom, into the series. But that's interesting. I didn't think about it that way.
Yeah. But even Mandalorian, I think people like Grogu, but the overall show they really can't get on board with, non-Star Wars people, that is.
Oh,
whereas yeah. this, it's there is Star Wars stuff happening, but there is a sort of a central plot which involves the relationship between Obi-Wan and Leia.
Yeah.
And I think that's relatable for non-Star Wars fans.
So, interesting. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
Maybe we should have her on next time just to give an opinion of what you thought of the series.
That'd I asked her before. I was like, what do you think of Obi-Wan? She's like, oh, I don't like Star Wars. So like, but you watched the whole show.
That's great.
Like, oh, I just don't like the creatures and I just don't like the overall atmosphere. I'm like, oh, fair enough.
Yeah. She would be really valuable in like a Star Wars focus group.
Yeah.
Like, just being honest about it. And so like all the execs are taking furious notes for the next series. It's just like...
Yeah, and there is some good practical effects in this, actually. There's one character in particular where they meet him in like the third episode, I thought.
Yeah, Kumail Nanjiani, yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's practical. He's a
practical. Oh, yeah,
they brought in Kumail Nanjiani,
practical effect.
They did just use a poster of him.
Yeah, spoiler alert, no, not really. He's a minor character, but he's good.
Cool, cool. Okay, so I give it a cognitive.
There's some minor characters in this that don't really do much as well.
There are.
Yeah.
For, I think,
like good name actors as well. Kumail Nanjiani and Ice Cube's son. I forget what his name is.
Ice Cube's son. Oh yeah, he's in the fourth episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that other lady as well. She plays a bit more of a prominent role, but she is the
Ice Cube's son does nothing in this.
No, I didn't even know he was Ice Cube's son.
What's Ice Cube's real name? Because this guy's name is that with Junior behind it.
Oh, okay. I can look up the cast.
Yeah. We can have a check.
Yeah, when we get into it.
I was thinking something creative. Like
Han from Fast and Furious is in this.
He is. He doesn't do much
either.
He doesn't
do anything.
Oh, is he really?
He's one of the...
he's one of the Inquisitors.
Inquisitors, yeah.
Not the main Inquisitor.
Yes.
Like
the fifth brother.
Fifth brother, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's the one that's always on her... On
O'Shea account. Jackson Jr., yep. I remembered. That's his name, yeah.
The other lady I was referring to was Indira Varma.
Varma. Oh, yes. She was in Game of Thrones as well.
She was alongside
Petra Pascal for Dawn. They both made it to Star Wars.
Yeah.
Yeah, I give it a cognitive recalibration.
Yeah, probably do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would have watched it again, though. Maybe not that I'd watch any of these again.
I think it does fit in well between the prequels. And If you're doing that sequence, I think you could watch it.
Yeah.
It's better than... Another thing I didn't mention was because they followed this 6-episode structure, there were certain things that they definitely could have left out. I think this would have actually been a better movie.
Yeah.
Because they did a Han Solo movie. I think
that's why they don't do movies anymore.
Maybe, but I think this would have, just the way it was, the story goes as well. I think it would have fit well into a nice, like, 2.5-hour movie. But
possibly, yeah. An episodic series kind of maybe does it a bit of disservice. Yeah, I would give it a, what's my rating? Level stars. I'd give it 7.5 stars out of 10.
7.5 lightsabers out of 10.
7.5 lightsabers, yeah. Seven lightsabers and a pike out of 10, yeah.
I don't know what a pike is, but I
like
it.
It's like one of those, like, hybrid
weapons. It's what Yoda uses.
Yeah, Yoda's lightsaber. That's seven regular lightsabers.
Seven regular ones and Yoda's one, yeah.
Yeah, and for both Star Wars fans and not, I would say, yeah, it's definitely, that's just below Mandalorian Season 2 and, above Book of Boba Fett.
We'll jump into spoilers then. So if you haven't seen Obi-Wan, go watch it. We do recommend it.
Yeah.
And come back to this point in the episode and listen to our spoilers. All right, so we can go episode by episode. So episode 1 starts with a pretty in-depth breakdown of what happens in the prequels, actually. A lot of people were watching the prequels before this show came out.
Nice.
In preparation for it, and they're like, we didn't have to put ourselves through all of that. We could have just watched this recap. It was much less painful. But, yeah, they did a good job with the recap. Essentially, if you hadn't seen the prequels, it sort of gives you an idea of what happened.
Yeah.
And then you...
The bare necessities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the most important snapshots. Yeah. You go straight into... Actually, the first sequence is when the younglings are... It's in the Jedi Temple, right? Where...
Oh, the massacre?
Yes.
Order 66.
Order 66.
Yeah, they go in hot.
It's only like a 2-minute sequence, but they show a little bit of that, which we do come back to later in the show with Reva. Apparently, a fan theory the whole time was Reva was a youngling. Did you know that?
Well, it's so obvious if you rewatch it. And I knew this from the very start because at the end of that sequence, they zoom in on this girl's face and she's African-American and they zoom in on her and she like has an expression. And then the very next scene, you see Reva. It's like, oh yeah, so who's this going to be? It's obviously Reva.
They're playing with it. I didn't catch on immediately. Like
I didn't catch on either.
It was only when I went to the internet and everyone's saying, oh, it's got to be this black girl. And I'm like, there's got to be more than one diverse character. Like, there's Indian characters. There's a lot of people there. So it's like, maybe it's just another person. But the moment someone said it, I'm like, probably makes sense to go that way. So I kind of wish they didn't leave hints of it too obviously. It would be nice to kind of be a bit of a real surprise.
Yeah. Well, I think people didn't realize it until she knew that Anakin was Darth Vader.
Which doesn't make sense. Well, how does she know he's Darth Vader?
So she saw him march into the temple.
In the temple.
Yeah, but he was Anakin Skywalker. So how does she know who Darth Vader is?
Yeah. So I think it was...
It doesn't make sense.
It was implied that somehow she made the connection that this guy was a Jedi turned Sith. And then, Darth Vader, unless they use his name.
Maybe someone referred to him as...
But who would have referred to him as Darth Vader? No one knew. The only guy that said he was Darth Vader was the Emperor. And then he goes in and kills a lot of people. And then he fights Obi-Wan. And then he gets burnt up. And then he puts the mask on.
If this is following comic book canon...
It's not.
No, as in the comic books are made after Disney acquired them.
Oh, okay.
So the Darth Vader comic books, his clone troopers, once they were activated, the Order 66 activation chip. Go watch the Clone Wars, people, if you know what I'm talking about. When they get activated, they actually refer to him as Darth Vader, even though he's not yet in the suit.
So maybe they knew it. But someone referred to him.
How does no one else know that he's Anakin Skywalker then?
Like the other Inquisitors and...
Yeah. Because apparently only she knows.
Yeah. As in only Anakin's closest 501st troops, the clone troopers, the Emperor, and Obi-Wan, the Jedi, know officially. And once the clone troopers were decommissioned, it was like, well, they were basically made, they were like on the streets and stuff, like you see later on. No one actually cared what they thought. So there is a possibility of her knowing, but I don't like the way they made her like this really, really intuitive, clever character who just connected the dots.
Yeah. You know? Well, they needed to explain how she knew.
That's true.
It doesn't make sense to just say, oh, this guy, Anakin, came in and killed a lot of kids. And, oh, now there's this guy in this suit who's a different height and has a different voice and a different lightsaber. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's the same guy.
The only thing that came to me was the same thing that how Obi-Wan knew that he felt a presence that was familiar. It could have been like Anakin's force. That she recognized it, like saying, oh, this is the same force. This is the same darkness that I felt. But I think we can all agree by saying that Reva's addition to this series was, in some ways, it's good to see an Inquisitor, like focusing the story on an Inquisitor. But I thought the show was going to focus more on Obi-Wan. And I think the focus from episode one, you can tell immediately that it shifts.
Well, before you get introduced to Obi-Wan, you get introduced to her. Yeah. The Inquisitors, because they come to Tatooine, right? And
then, true. Yeah. That's the first scene.
Yeah. I think the problem is her motivation is very muddled. So in the first half of the season, you find out she's trying to kill Obi-Wan so that she can get closer to
Darth Vader.
Yeah. And then in the second half of the season, you find out she wants to kill Obi-Wan to get closer to Darth Vader, to kill Darth Vader. But there's many times in the first half of the season that she's in the same room as Darth Vader. And it's not like when you get to the end of the season and you see her plan, it's not like there was anything more to it. She just gets close to him and tries to stab him. She could have done that much earlier.
Yeah, I think the way she was in the same room as Darth Vader the whole time, and I thought she wasn't going to attack him because he's Darth Vader. Like, she needs a better plan.
But at the end, her plan is just that.
Yeah. That was a bit disappointing because in the end, she literally just goes up to him and tries to stab him. I thought she would have had, especially because she spent her whole life planning for this moment, I thought she would have done something a little bit different. I think she got influenced a little bit by Obi-Wan as well in that moment where he's like, I'll bring him to you. And then,
I don't think she was planning any of it after Obi-Wan kind of flipped the tables in episode 5. I think it was, or episode 4.
And then the last part of her motivation is completely left field where she gets stabbed and she should have died, but for some reason she's fine.
Yeah.
And then she sees a recording that – does that even explain that it's
– I think she just – She just assumes
that there's this kid in Tatooine that is related to Darth Vader, so she wants to go kill this kid. But Darth Vader – does not know this kid exists at this point. So is she really hurting him by killing this kid? no. Like, what is your motivation here? Why are you going to kill this kid?
True. And even if Darth Vader did know that, oh, one of his kids was on Tatooine and he really loves this kid, what does killing this kid do? Just create pain?
Yeah, what is this motivation?
Goal?
Yeah.
It's like the character development needs to be something that the audience can relate with, even if it's a villain. Right, even if it's a villain, it's like, okay.
As long as you understand why you don't need to understand, but if they have a reasoning for what they're doing,
yeah.
But there's no reasoning for what she's doing. She's just doing shit to do shit. Yeah. And they needed to have a fight scene on Tatooine.
I think that was all unnecessary because at the same time that fight scene was happening, Obi-Wan was fighting Darth Vader, which was much more interesting than what was happening on Tatooine. She was just chasing young Luke through the desert. Like, that was not very interesting at all. Yeah. And you knew she was not going to kill Luke because Luke's obviously in the rest of the series, so she's not going to actually do anything to him. So, yeah, it was definitely that last episode was, on her side, was disappointing. And also the fact that they leave her to die, considering that she did the same thing to the Grand Inquisitor, right?
Yeah.
Because she supposedly kills him, but then he returns.
Mm.
So he's fine. He's alive. They do the same things. They stab her and they leave her. It's like, yeah, you're going to die. Someone just literally came back from the same wound. And he's still alive. Yeah. So wouldn't you make sure that she's dead? Like,
it's the thing wherein, like, in Phantom Menace, right? Qui-Gon gets into this epic duel with Darth Maul, and at the very end, Darth Maul deals a killing blow, which is right through the chest. Mm. And you know it's a killing blow. There's no coming back from it because of the music, the tone, and what happens later. Mm. Now, it's not nearly as dramatic when, you know, the Grand Inquisitor gets hit through the chest, impaled, I should say, and then Reva gets impaled in the same manner. So it is kind of inconsistent when you show them living again, unless they had some mechanical alterations beforehand, we don't know. All we know is that this is set before Rebels, and in Star Wars Rebels, the main villain is the Grand Inquisitor. So you know he's alive. There's not many stakes to be held for the Grand Inquisitor. When you see him get killed, it's like, I know he's not going to die.
Yeah. I mean, and even for non-Star Wars people who didn't know that, like when he comes back, I'm like, oh, I thought he got impaled. Like, he's not going to kill you? Like, why is he looks fine as well. It's not like he didn't even look injured.
Reduces the stakes, I guess.
So the fact that they just left her.
And
she wasn't like dead. She was still had a lot of life in her. So I was like, why wouldn't you just make sure that they're dead?
Same thing happens as well with, I guess you could say Obi-Wan didn't want to do it, but in the last fight, Obi-Wan leaves Darth Vader as well, even though he could have killed him.
Yeah. His intention wasn't to kill him. But
yes.
Yeah.
No, but
it's that he was always, so this is my understanding of that whole scene. We're jumping straight ahead to the finale, right?
Yeah.
At the end of Revenge of the Sith, he had to watch his friend die. And then in this series, he has to watch him die all over again because he realized that Anakin is actually fully gone. When he realizes from episode 2, I think it was when Reva says his name, Anakin Skywalker's still alive, you see like this flash of fear in everyone's eyes. Ewan McGregor's acting is amazing in this scene where he's like, oh shit, my brother's still alive somewhere, like in that suit. But that moment when they actually face off and Darth Vader's telling Obi-Wan, Anakin Skywalker is dead. I killed him. That's the moment where, like, he's truly, like, that's it. The last bit of hope is gone.
Should that disconnect him from Darth Vader, though, and that this guy is essentially going around and, like, ruling the planet? He's Hitler, and you have the chance to kill Hitler, but you're like, nah, I'm going to leave him so that some kid could kill him later. Well, I kill him. No, who kills him? He kills himself later, but yeah.
Essentially, I feel like Obi-Wan always thought his mission was to, in this series, was that once he realizes that this Darth character, Anakin's still alive, that he has to kill Anakin. He has to do it, right?
I think through the series, he's trying to turn Anakin. He's trying to turn him back. I think that's he's like, oh, he's still in there. I can make him good again. But then at the end, he realized he can't.
I never got the feeling that he was trying to still save him, but in Revenge of the Sith, there was that, like, throughout the duel, he goes through those machinations of, you know, it's not too late. You still, like, he goes, I failed you. Like, I failed you. You're gone too far. And then that's when he realizes when he finally has to cut off his limbs and kill him. He's like, all right, there's no saving you. You're too far gone. But he's still left with the trauma. And then in this point, he's like, I felt like he still felt like he needed to end Anakin or at least confront him and deal with him. When he realized he's no longer there, that's it. He's just like, I don't care. My friend is gone. My brother is gone. You killed my friend. So he actually accepts this third person killed my brother, and that's you, and I don't have any hatred against you. It's just that my brother was too weak to fight you off. I don't care anymore.
I feel like he still should have killed him though. Like, legitimately, he's meant to be a savior, I guess, of some kind.
And that
if you go back to it, like, this guy's literally ruling the galaxy, killing lots of people. He's evil, pure evil, and you have a chance to kill him, but you're just going to leave him there. Like you did in Revenge of the Sith as well, where you just left him there and he's come back and he's come back more evil. So you're going to do the same mistake again?
I could almost feel like he pitied Darth Vader in that moment because he was basically half breathing. He was barely functional. My helmet was half open. He was like suffocating. And the way he looked at him, it just felt like he was just pitying him. Like, you know, this is just pathetic. So do what you want. I'm not going to.
Obviously, he has to stay alive because they have the movies afterwards.
Because of the canon,
But, yeah, I don't know. I thought it was awfully – they're hamstrung with what they have afterwards. But it's stupid that he would let him live twice.
Yeah.
They should have written in a different way so that he couldn't kill him, or it was like, someone comes and saves him or something and he has to go. Because he does have the opportunity to kill him. There's no like left or right. He could kill him right there.
Yeah, if there was no story already made after this, then I agree that that would have been like the end of that character, this Darth character. Because this is the strongest that we see Obi-Wan ever exist. Like his fighting prowess and his ability to use the Force, we don't see it.
Yeah, we never see that
than what he shows in this series, which is great. I guess that's what you do when you try and make a TV series in between two established narratives.
You're hamstrung by what's on the other side of it.
Yeah. And it's difficult to create stakes, which is why you have to introduce new characters and try and build that in. So that's, I appreciate the challenge the writers had to deal with here.
Maybe we won't follow the episode structure because we've gone right to the end anyway, but let's talk about Hayden Christensen returning.
Oh, yeah.
So there were, in episode 5, they actually did have some flashback sequences where they're doing a lightsaber training battle, and there's some interesting conversation in that sequence as well. But a lot of people picked up on this, and I picked up on it when I was looking at the sequence again, but they didn't take the opportunity to use this de-aging technology because Hayden Christensen, he also has aged very well, but he obviously wasn't a 20-year-old in that sequence. He looked his age.
Yeah, this currently is meant to be before Revenge of the Sith, around the time in between.
It's meant to be,
after Attack of the Clones. But
Because he's got that little ponytail.
Yeah. Has he got a mechanical hand?
In that sequence?
Yes.
Yes.
It would, Anakin? Because it's after Attack of the Clones.
Attack of the Clones, before Revenge of the Sith.
Okay, yeah. So in that case, he should have a mechanical hand. But Hayden Christensen coming back, I feel like almost they couldn't have hidden it from the main production value and the hyping up of the series. It's amazing to have him come back because, he was the second half of the great, what made the prequels great, right? In terms of, like, maybe not so much in Attack of the Clones because it was his first appearance, but in Revenge of the Sith, him and Ewan McGregor's dynamic was amazing. And they, trained a lot. They had a lot of camaraderie as actors. So it was great to see them come back. And the moment you announce something like Hayden Christensen coming back, you know there's going to be some serious cinematic scenes for both of them. There's going to be like opportunities to show flashbacks and previous interactions. I wasn't expecting any flashbacks, but we got a really good one with that Jedi Temple training session, which was, that was really well done. That episode was a highlight for me.
Yeah, and I also liked in the last episode where his helmet is half broken and you hear both his Hayden Christensen's voice and James Earl Jones' interspersed. So that was really good. So it's kind of like Anakin coming out, but then Darth Vader taking over. So that was good.
That feels like I felt like I've been waiting 17 years for the closure that I experienced in that episode. Because anyone who's watched Revenge of the Sith will feel like, wow, that was a really abrupt snap from going like to the good guy to murdering children. And it's like, where is the transition? Darth, you're looking at Hayden Christensen, like, march through and wear the suit. You don't buy it as much. In this series, in that moment, the helmet's blasted, like ripped off by Obi-Wan's attack. They did such a good job with the visuals, but an even more amazing job with the audio mixing. That was really well done. Like,
that was
even his dialogue, forget about the actual sound of it. The dialogue that was written for him was really, really like heartbreaking, because it's like Obi-Wan keeps saying, you know, I failed you, you're my failure. And
yeah, he had a lot of regret, but I think in that moment it was released because he was like, it wasn't you, I killed
you. Yeah, like you actually hear Anakin saying, I'm not your failure. Like, this is my choice. You kind of see him owning his thing, and I am what remains. That, oh gosh, the line was so heartbreaking. I was literally tearing up watching that scene, because it's like, it's like the audience is saying goodbye to Anakin as well. You kind of see him disappearing, and then the moment it's like, you know, you didn't kill Anakin Skywalker. And then you see Hayden Christensen putting on that evil face. It's like he's actually owning Darth Vader's character, and it's like, yeah, this is amazing.
Yeah,
and they had the red light come up as well as he was getting more like Darth Vader-y, which was really, really cool. Yeah, I love watching all the reactions on YouTube for like all the different like fan channels. You watch that scene and like half of them are like traumatized crying, and the other half are like crazy ecstatic this is happening and they're watching it. So it's really cool to see how the thought process behind this scene was. And I feel a lot of it has to do with how Star Wars Rebels handled this scene. This exact same thing happens in the finale of season 2 for Rebels.
With Ahsoka.
With Ahsoka.
Yeah.
And it's the first time.
I heard it's very, she also breaks his helmet.
It's the other half of it.
Yeah. So she's fighting Darth Vader like in Malachor. Guys, watch Rebels. That season is amazing, because they go to this ancient temple, Sith temple. She fights Darth Vader. She wounds him. And then like you see, I forgot his name, but he's the voice actor for Anakin from Clone Wars.
Matthew Modine, I think.
Yeah, I think so. He comes back they synthesize his voice with James Earl Jones, who actually did the voice of Darth Vader in Rebels. And that was a very kind of unexpected, freaky moment that everyone was like, oh crap, did you see this scene in Rebels? They kind of bring him back. You see Anakin for the first time behind the shield. And that was a really interesting way to approach that. And obviously, they referenced that for this scene.
Yes.
But they pulled it off much better. Yeah. This is the cinematic version of that.
No, they did it. They did a good job. I think that last sequence was good. The only small gripe I had with it was a bit dark. Maybe just when I watched it, it felt a bit dark. But
Visually dark.
Visually,
I thought it was too emotionally dark.
Well, that's fine. But yeah, visually, I thought it was a bit dark. There were some parts you couldn't see very clearly what was happening, especially when he gets buried, and like that was all fine. And then obviously the stuff on Tatooine's also in the dark, so that's a little bit hard to see as well. I think they ended it very well. That was probably the best way they could have ended that dynamic between Darth Vader and Obi-Wan in this series. I think they did a good job with that.
Yeah. And it was really great to see Ewan McGregor give that real heart-wrenching performance, because he already said goodbye to Anakin once. This is him saying goodbye to Anakin again, but for the last time. Like he's actually just saying, like, because he didn't get to mourn him in the Revenge of the Sith. It was like the adrenaline of finding on Mustafar, you're kind of pretty piped up. You're screaming and you just go off. But this was like much more subtle, and it was like a proper goodbye.
I was going to say a problem with it. I feel like I'm griping about the problems a bit too much, but say what you're going to say.
No, I was just going to say, when you see him in A New Hope and he does meet Darth Vader, he doesn't have that connection. It's just like another. I mean, they do have a conversation, but it's not like they're.
Oh no, he's accepted. This is another person. Yeah, this is Darth. Yeah. This is not my mate. Yeah,
yeah, and he also calls him Darth, which is not Vader, but Darth.
Yeah,
he says that in this. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's good callback. Yeah.
What were you gonna say?
I was just gonna say the one of the problems I have with the series, which I mentioned before, was that at the end of Revenge of the Sith and at the end of this, it's quite similar. So he fights Darth Vader. He kind of has his peace with it, and then he goes to Tatooine to train, is what happens at the end of Revenge of the Sith, and it's what happens at the end of this as well. And I thought this would be more about him training with Qui-Gon and getting his connection with the Force a little bit better, but that's apparently what they're going to do for the next season. So I thought it was like, okay, they've done Revenge of the Sith. They're going to go in a different path, and Darth Vader's going to be in it, but he's not going to be the main antagonist, because that's kind of finished. But it's like, no, they're going to do that again, and then they're going to do something else. I felt like it was a repeat story, essentially, of Revenge of the Sith that didn't need to happen.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from, actually. Because
emotionally, he's obviously a bit of a wreck at the start of this season, and he would be, because it's just seen like his brother die, essentially.
Oh, he had to kill him with his own hands.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, like, going from that to what he is in New Hope, because in New Hope, he's like a Jedi. He's at the top of his powers, essentially, in New Hope. So I think this works as a transition. Like, at the start of this season, he also doesn't know, like, he's refusing to use the Force and use lightsaber and stuff, and then he's forced to use it. And then after that, you see his transition to the final episode where he's doing all this crazy stuff. So I think that was good.
Hmm.
But from a story point of view, I get what you're saying.
It's the same story.
Yeah.
It's a similar story. The only difference I would hold is that people who left the theaters after Revenge of the Sith would have felt like, okay, Obi-Wan's character is now resolved. He's now going to be Anakin Guinness's character in New Hope. What we don't see is what effect that has on Obi-Wan's character, like him witnessing surveillance footage of watching Anakin, you know, massacre children, all the way down to him having to kill this dude who he, you know, helped raise. From episode one of this series, Obi-Wan series, you kind of see that he's still not sleeping. He's still having nightmares. He's still like seriously affected by the trauma of that fight, of that showdown. And if they didn't need to do that, they could have just shown him like already experimenting with touching the Force in different ways and talking to Qui-Gon. And I was actually expecting him to be in a level of like 10 years after the event, already in discussion with Qui-Gon. But the real heartbreaking thing is you see he's actually calling out to Qui-Gon. He's kind of praying and trying to talk to him, but he's not getting any answers. And he's probably been doing this for 10 years, which makes it all the more devastating. And it's like...
So I guess he just needed that closure. Well, Qui-Gon says when you... So you eventually do see him at the very end, and he says something like, I was there the whole time, but...
You weren't ready.
You weren't ready.
You weren't ready. And it was like, they did the whole play it out to the end kind of game where it's like, he's not going to get to learn the secrets until the very end of this episodic series. But that's frustrating to see. I would have loved to see him actually sit down and talk. Maybe it's grounds for season two. By the way, Liam Neeson coming back as Qui-Gon, that was an amazingly good little callback. I was hoping for it. I wasn't expecting it though.
Yeah.
I was like,
I'm pretty sure he shot that in his like
in his bedroom. House, in his cupboard.
I love it. So you took long enough, and it's like, bitch, I've been waiting for you for 10 years. I just felt like Obi-Wan could have been like really, but it was great to see him come back in the same, you know, robes and costumes, because you see Yoda mention it at the end of Revenge of Sith, saying, you know, Qui-Gon's spoken to me, and I'll teach you how to commune with him. Clone Wars touches
which
on
is that. Why you expect that to be at the start of this already, but like it's fine. Like they had to do this kind of story. Well, they wanted to do this. They could have gone the other way, but I thought it was retreading some ground. Yeah. But
I do appreciate them showing Obi-Wan being absolutely alone for a bit of time, isolated from anyone, like anything.
Is it basically a Star Wars version of a butcher? That what he's doing at the start, like he's cutting meat.
He's working in an outdoor meat factory,
kind of like what Rey was doing.
I did get that feeling. And when he went back to his hut,
Rey was scavenging.
Yeah, but she was also. Oh yeah, that's right. She was scavenging. Yeah, yeah.
And then they use the same Insta porridge thing. Where he goes back to his hut. Yeah, and he makes this kind of. Synthetic porridge.
It's the
same stuff.
It's like Maggie noodles.
Yeah.
Without the spice.
Star Wars version.
Yeah.
Without the spice.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's if you've read the Star Wars comics, issue number 20, I think it was, it goes into the solitude that Obi-Wan and like how he gets into fights with Owen and that kind of stuff. But like if you've read the comics, it's great to see that they've actually decided to go with the whole solitude path of showing him by himself, struggling, not being able to talk to anyone for a bit, and then having at least some company later on in the form of Leia and other people to kind of talk about his past. I felt like the only change I would make with this dynamic with Anakin was that instead of it being so filled with sadness, that if there was a little bit of hint of like, Anakin, why did you do this? You know, because I feel like Obi-Wan brings it on himself. Like he's one responsible for failing Qui-Gon, for screwing up the whole prophecy and all that kind of stuff. It'd be great for him to just say, you know, Anakin, you're smarter than this. Why? That would have been nice to see a bit more onus on Hayden Christensen. It was great to see Hayden Christensen come back.
Yeah.
Like the shit he had.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
To deal with right after the prequels came out, he got so much shit from the fans and from... He was basically shunned.
Yeah, I don't think it's not his fault. The dialogue in the prequels is terrible.
Yeah.
And no matter how good of an actor you are, if you're working with bad dialogue, George Lucas, it's not going to... Yeah.
So to see him finally attend his first Comic-Con?
Yeah.
Like with fans, not just cheering, like going apeshit at like Hayden Christensen's appearance. It's just so wholesome to see that. He's finally getting the deserved attention. And like he was sitting with Ewan McGregor in like Comic-Con, and it was like at the end of this interview they was having, and it's like, this is where the fun begins, and the crowd goes nuts. The crowd goes absolutely nuts. It's like
that was at Star Wars Celebration.
Yeah. Anaheim. Yeah.
So the other main dynamic, or the main plot of this whole show, is Leia. So Leia gets kidnapped in the first episode, and the end of the first episode, right?
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah.
And there's some comical chase sequences. So that first one was, I was like, what's going on here? Because she's a small girl and she's outrunning these
bounty hunters. Kidnappers.
Yeah. But they do kidnap her. And then obviously they send a call out to Obi-Wan. Firstly, he's reluctant, but then he does it. What makes him do it in the end? Because he says no, right? And then he...
What makes him... I think so. Basically... So he gets the beacon call from Leia's adoptive father. What's his name again?
Jimmy Smith's name.
Bail Organa. Bail Organa. So Bail Organa calls him. And I feel like...
Bail Organa calls him and then he comes to Tatooine and then he goes.
So initially he refuses.
Yeah. When he calls him, he's like, no.
Doesn't he? Because there's another Jedi on Tatooine who's getting hunted by the Inquisitors, right?
Correct. Yeah. The Padawan murdered. Who escaped Order 66.
Yeah. He gets murdered, and then Obi-Wan could have helped him, but he doesn't. And he sees him.
Nah, but that's not when he goes. It's when Jimmy Smith calls him.
Yeah.
He says no, and then Jimmy Smith comes.
Yeah. Bail comes right down to Tatooine and says, this is dire. My daughter's missing.
We need to do it.
Yeah. And then he reluctantly goes.
In the hopes that he might be able to find and see where she is and help her out.
Yes.
I was not expecting either of them to be in this show, like Bail or Leia. Like I wasn't expecting either of them to be in this show. It was kind of a misdirect because they kind of showed Luke in the trailer.
Luke's basically not in this show, to be honest. Yeah, he's
more or less.
Once again, they're hamstrung with using Luke because he didn't know the Jedi existed until The New Hope, and he had never seen a lightsaber until The New Hope.
True.
So every time he's close to seeing any of those things, he conveniently like leaves a room or gets knocked out in this.
Yes.
Yeah. And he doesn't really know Ben that well. He's like, Ben, that old hermit? Like, it's like a distant memory.
Yes.
So you know he's only met him once or twice in his life.
Because Leia does send out a signal to Obi-Wan in A New Hope.
Yeah.
And she's very formal, like as if she hasn't met him before.
Yeah.
But I think that makes sense because she's like 10 years old or something in this. And then that's like 10 years later? Because she's like 19.
19 years, 9 years, yeah. It'll be yeah. 9 years.
9 years later. Yeah. So if you hadn't met, you spent 2 days with someone 9 years ago and you're speaking to them again 9 years later, you're probably going to be a little bit more formal. It's like it's not like your buddies because you haven't talked to this person in a
correct.
Very long time.
Yeah, I felt like they thought about that well. And I think she says something like, years ago, you helped my father in the Clone Wars. And it's like, true, he did do that. He also, now he technically helped you as well.
Yeah.
So it's like kind of. You get that when she's asking for, I need your help once again.
Yes.
And it's like, okay, he needs to get the princess.
So kind of. It obviously it's
it doesn't retro. Fully work, but it works.
Yeah, but it kind of works.
If we're nitpicking, it doesn't work, but it works. It's fine. Works.
You can tell that she had more of a relationship with Obi-Wan than Luke did. That's all they're establishing at this
it
point.
It doesn't break the universe or anything. It's fine. Yeah.
It all works.
Yeah,
they've at least done their homework well. Yeah. So, how much does the audience buy this?
And it turns out kidnapping Leia was a trap to actually get Obi-Wan. Right.
Right. So, right. Separate Reva. Yeah.
Yeah, and it. Almost works because he goes there and he finds – he doesn't actually find Leia, but he eventually finds her anyway.
Yeah.
But at this stage, he's still not using his powers. Like he's kind of reluctant to use his full force powers or anything. But then in the second episode when Leia is once again running away from him – he's running away from him actually in this particular instance because she – this I didn't really understand. Like she didn't want to go with him.
She didn't trust him, I think.
She didn't trust him? So she starts running away from him, but then she starts getting chased by the bounty hunters.
Yeah, yeah. She like, the way they introduce Leia is just like, she's very clever. She's very, very perceptive. But she's at this stage, she's a little bit too smart for her age. She starts suspecting her friends as well. So she suspects that Obi-Wan's actually someone who's just trying to kidnap her, like, paid by some other bounty hunter. Like, you know, she doesn't feel Obi-Wan's legit. Which is kind of Obi-Wan's fault because he's kind of scraggly. He's got a cloak on, and his father says he's a Jedi. I think his father introduced him as a Jedi. I don't know if he does, but it's like, who? What are you doing? You're just running around fumbling. Like, are you actually someone to help me? Are you trying to get me back to the person who's trying to kidnap me?
And he's like, oh, from now on, I'll refer to you as my daughter, and you'll be my granddaughter. You'll be my daughter, and she's more like granddaughter.
Granddaughter, maybe. Yeah. I'll be honest, I love those little like witty lines because it's like, yeah, she's a bit snarky. That's the character.
But yeah, that whole it was fine, I guess, because it does force him to use the force eventually because he's falling off and he has to save her and he uses the force.
Yeah, to reach out. To literally save her from falling.
And then she realized that he is a Jedi. And it's like, oh, okay, fair enough. And this is where they also introduce Kumail Nanjiani's character, who's pretending to be a Jedi.
Very useless character. Doesn't do much. He tells them to go to this place. That's his role in this.
He tells them to go to the place, but then he also turns up later.
Later, just magically. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's also given like a whole lot of responsibility because he gives them that beacon, doesn't he? And the reason Reva finds it is because he drops it.
Yeah.
That's why? True. Yeah. Why do you get Kumail Nanjiani for this role? Is the question. Maybe Kumail Nanjiani is a pretty big actor now.
It's the comedic relief, I think.
He's not even that funny. I
think it was an attempt to try and make it like if you're going to make the series lighthearted, you have to introduce a random character.
I think if you're going to do that though, have him be with them the whole time. Then
yeah, I thought. Yeah. He would be with them the whole time, but he isn't.
But having for one episode and then, like, they do that a bit in Mandalorian, but I feel like they haven't got this big of an actor ever and just kind of
maybe he's going to be in other things. Like maybe
could be, yeah.
Could be. One thing that was kind of interesting is that it's the first time you see someone parodying a Jedi in the actual Star Wars series, and it's like you kind of see what has become of the Jedi Order from, like, this, like, the golden age of the Jedi Temple to this, like, people mocking or kind of just parodying them to make money. Like what happens with sages nowadays? Like people pretend to be sages and get money making for hot like palm reading shit. And it's just like, it's appropriation. It's absolutely denigrated the meaning of Jedi. And you see Obi-Wan interacting with him and it's like, oh, really? Is that what you do? You're swindling people's money to give them false hope and you're just smuggling them off planet. It's cool to see how like Obi-Wan's looking at like, oh, what the hell has this become? Is this what the word of Jedi has become? And it's just like, oh. Mm. And also, shout out to in that episode, Temuera Morrison reprises the role of a clone to show like an old veteran clone trooper just lying on the street asking for like change in his helmet, and it's just like, oh, that's an amazing callback. Underutilized talent for Temuera Morrison, but it was like a nice little connection to the whole universe.
I feel like that's a better cameo, like it makes sense in the universe than what they did with Kumail Nanjiani. Like you get a big actor and you put him there, but it makes sense in the universe. It's like, oh yeah, that's a cool cameo.
And it was 501st as well from his armor. So it was like one of the troops that marched the Jedi Temple to kill all the younglings. So it's just like
he was probably filming Book of Boba Fett in the another volume or something.
Yeah,
just like, come over here and do this little cameo.
Oh yeah, they were probably filming it around the same time. Yeah, yeah, true.
Yeah,
it was good to see. It was nice.
Yeah, so that basically takes us to the end of episode two because they get directions from Kamal Nanjiani's character to go to this other planet. It's interesting that you say Leia doesn't trust. Well, she's in that phase where she's, you know, she's a bit too smart.
Yeah.
But she does trust Kumail Nanjiani because she's like, oh, he told us to come here. And then Obi-Wan says, not everyone is good, Leia, which was interesting because Obi-Wan's generally a more positive person than he appears to be in, so far anyway in this series. But then obviously he evolves as time goes on and he sees a lot of there's a good dialogue where he says he sees both her father and her mother in her.
Yeah, yeah. Is this when they're on that planet?
I think they're on the Freck, who's the character that they meet there.
Yeah, yeah. They're on this mining planet where the Empire's mining Viltrium or something.
Yeah, and they're on his rural homestead. Truck.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they have that conversation. Yeah. Because she asks him, oh, are you my father? And he's like, no, I wish I was, but no. But I did know your parents.
That's actually – that character's played by a known actor.
Zach Braff.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they had him on the when you go into Disney Plus, when that episode came out, they had him as the banner.
Yep.
I showed it to my wife. I'm like, hey, look at that character. Should we watch the episode? And she actually started watching this series from that episode.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah, let's just see what this guy is up to. It looks interesting.
And it's like, I thought Zach Braff would be there. She's like, he's under a really thick costume. He's got tentacles and everything.
Yeah, yeah. Practical effect as well, which look good. But he betrays them because he's also a
sympathizer to the Imperials. Yeah.
There's also this really stupid part then when they're at a gate and they have to get through the gate. But the gate is like this room. It's from one side of the room to the other. And that's the only part of the gate. And on either side, just open fields.
Yeah.
And then to get through the gate, they shoot the thing to open it. You could just walk around it if you really wanted to.
Yeah.
You probably could. It's one of those things where it's just blocking the road. So if you had a vehicle and you know you wanted to go
But
around,
they don't take the vehicle. They just walk through it.
Yeah. Well, there's a double bluff there because they're like, they get caught and then
there's someone else that comes.
And then someone else comes, but then they're about to get caught again, but then
She shoots them because
So it was like a twist within a twist.
We're talking about Indira Rama's character. Yeah, the Imperial officer who's a double agent.
Yeah, because first they seemingly get away because Obi-Wan kills the stormtroopers and they blast open that door and they walk through. But then a tank comes in and then a whole bunch of other stormtroopers come out.
Yeah, yeah.
That's like, very Star Wars, though. Yeah, that's like a Star Wars moment.
You get caught again. And then another twist is Indira Rama's behind them and she shoots them.
Nice. Yeah,
that's like vintage Star Wars. That kind of stuff always happens. So,
Yeah. And it's like you know they've done their homework when it's like the Empire's basically based around the whole Nazi regime and their whole thing was, these are going to be overwhelming forces, over-monitored and no matter, you can't escape. So it got that feel down. It was nice. Yeah, very touching scene at the on the raft where he's
That
like,
was good, yeah.
They're, and it's like, the whole trope of the nosy soldiers always inquiring and like the moment your story doesn't line up, it's like, but you said you were from this planet.
Yeah.
And it's just like, this feels
He makes what should have been a pretty fatal error where he calls her Leia. They should have probably known it by then, but he's like, I still miss my her mother whose name was Leia. And he kind of covers it up, but then they should have probably figured it out then.
Should figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's be funny if it's just like, well, yeah, it's a very complex situation. There's many layers to this. So I'll call her that instead of thinking about it. Like,
yeah. Well, she's actually better in that situation than him because she kind of talks them out of it.
That's where she kind of shines. Good tension building, but it's just like, come on, Obi-Wan, you're better than this. Don't let that slip. But yeah, when he thinks about Padme and Anakin and like he's kind of hinting at the fact that he's looking at their progeny for the first time, actually thinking about, oh, crap, this is Padme's daughter. She was a smartass. She's a smartass. And like, this is Anakin's daughter. He's a hothead. She's a hothead. She's like, the best of both worlds and the worst of both worlds in one.
And then what happens at the end of that episode? They end up getting on another ship to go somewhere else, right?
Yep. It's the first three episodes are basically just them getting on ships at the end to go to other places.
Yes.
And then they end up with O'Shea Jackson Jr.
Well, at the end of the third episode, he does have a confrontation with Darth Vader in the third episode.
Yeah.
Where he gets burnt and then somehow escapes as well.
Yeah. Is it on the same planet?
Yes, on the same planet.
Druva, I think it was, isn't it?
I think so.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, it was on the same planet because on that same planet, there was also this underground.
The path. Yeah. The smuggling network that they use to get younglings out.
Yeah, but it's also
Force-sensitive families.
Where Jedi, because there was some inscriptions on the wall, right?
Yeah, so there was a particular room where you could see all these etchings done by people who've walked in this network. And it's called The Path. It's a reference to a smuggling route in one of the Legends comics, I believe, or the comics that are made, the High Republic comics. They use it in this one as like a network of trade routes that are used by regular scrap metal trade people, but are hitched on by these smugglers to kind of get force-sensitive children out. And everyone, you can see that a lot of people have passed through this particular room. They've etched their names or they've written messages, and it's all in Orabesh, so we can't understand it. But Obi-Wan notices like one notable Jedi, like Quinlan Voss was here. And if you've watched like any of the Clone Wars series, he's one of these Jedi who's like a bit more rowdy. He's like a ragtag.
People thought Jedi. That O'Shea Jackson Jr. was going to be Quinlan Voss.
Yeah, because he hyped up his role in like saying, oh, yep. I'm going to be a cool character. You guys will be blown away.
But he's nothing.
He was, he was a new character made for the show. So it's like, okay, yeah, it was still good. It was really good. I loved how O'Shea Jackson's character, where he was like, he called Obi-Wan like general, and it kind of just that threw me off. It was just like, oh shit. Yeah, this guy was a general in an army. He was like leading whole platoons into war. And this is what he's doing now. He's running away from the same kind of army, a bit of a recluse now. So it was really cool to see that moment where he was referring to Obi-Wan as a military general, because he still remembers him as a figurehead in the Jedi. So he must have seen him. He must have encountered him, or at least seen him and Anakin at one point.
The end of the third episode, so Darth Vader and Obi-Wan have a conversation. Obi-Wan is getting absolutely destroyed.
Oh, yeah. This is the first time they meet again after
And obviously Obi-Wan's like way... He's nowhere near his peak, right? So, and Darth Vader's almost at his peak.
Yeah.
It's a complete mismatch in terms of powers. This was one part where I was like, so he's getting burnt, but he somehow still escapes, and Darth Vader lets him escape. It feels like he just lets him escape because he could have stopped him. There was just a bit of fire in between them.
Yeah, there was a wall of fire, and I feel like for a dude who's like burnt half his body, I think he might have like a slight fear of fire, like that sense of like...
Saying that again, it's the same thing as that gate before. The fire's as big as this room, and on either side, there's free space. It's just, open space.
He could have just used the force to like grab him anyway, right? Like he didn't even need to cross the fire.
Yeah, part of me thinks he didn't want to kill him. He wanted to make him suffer. Yeah. Like burn him. Like he even says that. He's like, I'll do to you what you did to me. I'll leave you the way you left me or something like that. There's a lot of resentment in Darth Vader's voice. You can hear that.
It felt convenient that he could get out of that situation the way he got out of it, but he had to get out of it. This is the third episode, and they
I mean, the plot armor's basically making him, no one's gonna die here, we know that. So my thought was, what's gonna happen here? Because Darth Vader is toying with Obi-Wan has not held up his lightsaber in many years. So he's just doing like, they're all both single-handedly using their lightsabers with one hand. And it's just, you can tell Obi-Wan's form is not there. He's very, very flimsy, literally just surviving, like just parrying. He's not doing any attack moves. And they don't duel as much as they just kind of try and attack each other. Doesn't go that well. Finally, they go away. Obi-Wan's really badly hurt.
They chuck him in a Bacta tank. But then Darth Vader also, I think in the next episode, you see them both in a Bacta tank actually.
That is true.
Yeah.
Call back to the end of episode 2 when Reva says Anakin Skywalker's name and Obi-Wan's just kind of left reeling. And he says the word Anakin, and like Darth Vader's like opens his eyes in the back of the tank, like half a star system away or something. That was cool.
Yes, that was
a cool moment. And this kind of brings me all back to like, they kind of show a lot of, they try and show a lot of what Darth Vader's feeling or Anakin's feeling without showing his emotion too much, which is a really, really interesting way that they kind of, you sure, he's still very angry. He's still very resentful, and he's like, he's got a lot of hatred towards his old master. And you kind of get the feeling that Anakin still hasn't fully channeled his dark side yet, like as in to make him powerful through the dark side, the way we see Darth Vader in Rogue One, for example. Like that happens pretty much 5 years after nine years after the events of Obi-Wan Kenobi. So you could say that's his fully realized state of like, you know, he's embraced this darkness if you're a dark force user. But in here, he's still kind of figuring it out.
Like, he's still got issues with his old master and he just wants to get him back and he's still trying to burn him and shit. So.
And Palpatine is in the last episode, right, where he's – there's a very short
– Yeah, he does make an
dialogue
appearance.
Where he says something about, like, how he hasn't let go or something like that to Darth Vader. And maybe that was
– It's essentially just saying – don't chase after Obi-Wan anymore. Yeah.
It's like he almost calls him out, like saying, you're pretty obsessed about your old master. Are you sure you're okay? Mm. Like he says it in that kind of toying voice. Like you're thinking about him that much? Like you still attached to him? Like what's wrong? Like you wouldn't be attached to someone unless you had feelings for them or you had a connection. And it's like it's been like 10 years, you're still attached to it. So he kind of calls him out and then immediately you see Darth Vader like leaning back and going, no, I'm over him. Like, I'm completely over him. I don't care. And like, I remember reading someone's analysis of that, and it's like Darth Sidious, the whole Sith movement of like the rule of two. Even if you hate your like someone, you're showing emotion towards them. You're focusing your emotion towards them. So Sidious is such a purist in the Sith ways. He's like, he doesn't even accept his disciples thinking about their old masters. Rule of two means you focus your hatred on me. So Sidious is actually like, if you want to hate someone, hate me. That was the whole essence of the whole relationship. Like, it was really messed up. Like, I don't want you focusing your dark energy towards someone else. Focus towards me and get stronger.
Yeah.
Don't focus it towards your old master. And that's, if you've read any of the Sith novels and get into that geeky, like, thought process of the light, dark side of the Force, it was really interesting to see, like, that's the angle that Darth Vader is being pushed towards. So that eventually leads to him killing Darth Sidious towards at the end of Revenge of the Sith.
Yes.
Which is how it should have remained.
Yes.
Yeah. But that's a cool setup for that relationship dynamic.
The only thing that happens that we've missed out on is that Reva does capture Leia at the end of episode 3 as well.
Yes, she does.
So I thought Leia was not going to be in this whole season actually. I thought she was going to be part of it but not the whole thing. But she's actually part of the whole season. So she gets captured by Reva and she basically starts torturing her almost in the next episode.
Is there a moment where she tries to sit down on a table and reason with her like she's a friend, just talk, like, you know,
I think she tries at the start, but that? Leia's just like, nah.
She tries to use the Force on her, but then obviously Leia has some Force use as well, so
She tries to break her mind and mind read, it doesn't work. And then once she realizes that she can't force her way to have Leia tell her where Obi-Wan is, she just like
lets her go, doesn't she?
Well, she asks for Lola. She plays around with the droid. She's like, I had a droid once. Like, she starts channeling her own kind of childhood.
And she hacks it, right?
Yeah. She places a tracker or something. Yeah, the restraining bolt. To do that. And then she doesn't let her go as much as I think doesn't she put her in the chair in Inquisitorius?
Yeah.
Fortress Inquisitorius?
She puts her in a chair.
Like, which is.
But then Obi-Wan comes, right? And this is where they have that sequence where it's like underwater or something.
Yeah. So they actually have to infiltrate Fortress Inquisitorius on the. On a moon in orbit around Nur, the moon's name is Nur and it's in orbit around Mustafa, the planet where Darth Vader's fortress is. So it's, if you've played the Fallen Order games, I'd highly recommend playing that game. It's set 5 years after the events of Obi-Wan. So it's really pretty cool. But, 5 years prior to the events of Obi-Wan, because he's dealing with Cal Kestis. They actually go to Fortress Inquisitorius, where the Inquisitors are made. It's really dark. It's really fucking dark. Like, when they capture Padawans who've, like, evaded Order 66, they essentially torture them into becoming Dark Force users, and they make them Inquisitors. And it's just like, they're basically made to hunt down their own kind afterwards. So those chairs and that whole setup is like, it's underwater because it's meant to completely isolate them from any connection, any positive connection. So it's pretty dark. So when you see Leia in that chair, I was like, crap, I've seen other people in this chair. Like, you see him in Fallen Order. Like, you see Trilla Sodari and Cal Kestis' mentor eventually. And it's just like, this is not going to end well. So Obi-Wan has to infiltrate this fortress underwater with the help of Indira Varma's character, which is a really cool scene when she, like, is an officer walking through the fortress and she doesn't get the scan through. But she pulls rank and she completely dresses down this officer, like saying, which regiment are you from? You don't even know how to address a superior officer and that kind of shit. Like, I like that. That felt like it was straight out of The Great Escape when they were trying to escape the Nazi prison camp. Someone dresses up in the uniform and tries to speak in German and get around it.
Well, they managed to get out and Obi-Wan does start actually using some of his powers as well, because he breaks the well, the window's already sort of broken, but he uses the force to move the water towards stormtroopers. So that was pretty good.
That was interesting. Even before that scene, he passes to get to the central room. He passes this stasis chamber cell unit where there is many, many prisoners who are stored in stasis. Like you presume dead, but they're kind of frozen.
Yeah, yeah.
And I do really remember this. Interesting. Yeah. You see like a Padawan in there.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
from The Purge. You see like random other characters. Someone said they thought that they saw a Witch of Dathomir, like with a big headdress. And then there was also one of the old Jedi Masters from the Clone Wars. I forgot his name, but he was one of the oldest. He had like a cane. He was that dude with the big, like, almost like dreadlock-like looks, but it was alien. He makes an appearance. He's in the Foundling episode of the Clone Wars where he's teaching younglings, but he's in stasis, so it's like, oh, crap, okay. They have all these people.
Because that was interlaced with Leia getting interrogated by Reva.
Yeah.
So it was like... it's interesting, but I think you should probably try to get to Leia.
He's just kind of he's frozen in there. I'm trying to remember when they first used it. That was introduced. The stasis thing was done in Rebels, and it was done to draw the Jedi into a location because it's like they receive a transmission from this Jedi saying, "Oh, we've escaped the Purge. We're trying to find you." And what the Empire did was they used these stasis chambers to actually act like beacons for the Force. But these people are already kind of technically dying or dead. So the whole purpose of that thing is just to create a messy signal for Jedi who are surviving to try and seek out their own kind. So yeah, he would have just been blasted by this like dead force signals everywhere. And he's just like, this is like a cemetery. This is horrible. And it's like, Leia's still alive. Yeah, go get Leia while she's still there.
So they do escape. And it's at the end of this episode where there was another thing that I thought was a little bit convenient where Darth Vader... was it at the end of this episode where they all get on a ship?
That's at the end of the fifth episode.
Fifth episode, yeah. They all get on a ship to leave, and there's two ships, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's two ships.
So Darth Vader, like, gets control of one of the ships, and he, like, brings it down.
Yep.
And the other one just flies away. And
yeah,
and
it's
he just watches it. He's just like, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. that was the when they were escaping the hideout.
Yes, the hideout.
Right? And they had to open up the shield thing. Yeah, yeah, that was... yeah, to me, it's like, why not just pull that ship as well? And then you kind of realize he's using a lot of his force just to kind of tear the ship apart in the beginning. He does like crazy, almost like video game level force level moves.
Yeah, yeah.
Just pull this door out, smash this thing out. It takes off, and he's using a lot of it. And I feel like it could have drained him a little bit, even though he's a really strong force user.
Yeah,
that he does kill Reva straight after that, though. Like he fights Reva.
Oh, yeah, and he just toys with her lightsaber.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. So it can't be that weak, I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, but I don't know. I guess they have to do things for the plot. This is the problem I have with the show sometimes. They have to do things for the plot because it would make sense.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's like, why couldn't you just written that differently so it would have made more sense?
Yeah.
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 Yeah, that's true. I mean, in all credit, he tears down that one decoy ship, walks into it, looks around, and through the windows he sees another one takes off. So maybe he just didn't even notice. It was just like, oh, shit, that's gone. Okay.
And it was in episode four where Lola is hacked and essentially preventing them from closing the doors.
Yes. Actually, this was the episode.
Yeah.
Episode four was the one that I really liked because what happens is the whole situation is a siege.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's like Obi-Wan is actually thinking back to how Anakin plays militarily, and that's where you see the flashback of them training. And it's like, no, Anakin will not show any mercy. He goes for the full aggressive. And it flashes back to their duel. And it's like, Anakin's full on the offensive trying to get Obi-Wan down. And so he's thinking, okay, we shouldn't stay here. We should find an escape route. We need another way to get out because he's going to go full attack right down to his detriment. And I love that strategic play-by-play because it shows, and even Obi-Wan, it goes to Darth Vader's point of view. And it's like, Obi-Wan will put up a defense and he will care about, He'll care about protecting the aggressor as well.
Yes.
So he's not going to make an offensive move, and this goes back to the training where...
yeah, because in the training, well, they're both kind of figuring out each other's weaknesses because Obi-Wan's like, your pursuit to prove yourself is your weakness, and you'll remain a Padawan as long as you try keep doing that. And then Anakin says something around giving mercy is too merciful. Obi-Wan is too merciful, and he's always...
that's true.
Yeah.
Like, mercy will not lead to victory, my lord, and it's like... yeah. You never see that line in Revenge of the Sith. They put that line in because of the Clone Wars, because the whole Clone Wars is showing Anakin
as a war strategist, not showing mercy, charging into situation, completely obliterating the enemy force using like brute force, no matter what damage that causes. And that's exactly what Anakin is. He just flies into it head on, puts a thermal detonator charge in some tank and just blows that shit up and then comes out with the hostage. It's like, you could have killed the hostages. Well, he's left. Just like, that's it. And he just shows how reckless he is. Yeah. The point where he's like, yeah, he's saying your need to prove yourself is going to be your downfall. And that's exactly what happens. Like in still to this point. So it's kind of showing after all these years, Anakin still hasn't learned his weakness, which is that he's just obsessed with winning and finding and destroying, that you can, that can be taken advantage of. So the decoy works perfectly.
And then, yeah, and then it's the climax, the final episode, so which we've already talked about. Did we miss anything overall? At the end of that, at the end of the final episode, so there is, after all the action ends, there is this couple of sequences, one with Leia where Obi-Wan goes back and he gives her the holster.
Yeah. On Alderaan, right?
On Alderaan, yeah. And there's no weapon in it. And she's like, oh, there's no weapon in it. And it's like, well, you're 10 years old. You shouldn't be playing with weapons, but you're not always going to be 10 years old. So
that's true. It kind of lays the foundation of her, like her rebellion in her own self.
And then he goes and says hi, hello there to Luke.
That's it's nice to see Owen, because he's obviously an asshole to Obi-Wan the whole show. He's like, you don't need the boy. Like, oh, that scene in episode one, Obi-Wan's like, you know, when Luke comes of age, he needs to be trained. You know, it's part of the path of any Jedi. And it's like, the way you trained his father.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, shit, that was massive. That was burn. that was uncalled for. But it was like, that's straight out of the Star Wars comics as well.
Yes.
The series where he's just like, Owen is constantly fighting with Obi-Wan saying, you know, we don't need you. We'll be fine. Look what you did to Anakin. And then finally, Owen says, yeah, you can, why don't you, you want to say hi to this kid? It's like, he saved his life. You want to say hi to him? Like, that whole, like you were saying, Theron, with that whole end sequence chase where Reva's going after Luke was just completely not needed. Because it's like, it doesn't even show why she would want to, like, she's trying to get revenge on Darth Vader after she gets stabbed by Darth Vader. She dies again, technically. Now, her first move is to go after his children. A, I don't think he cares. B, I don't think he knows. And C, where did you get this newfounded need to kill a kid?
Yeah.
Like, she needs to have a motivation beyond just needing to cause pain. Like, because it doesn't make enough sense to say, oh, you destroyed my childhood, so I'm going to destroy your literal child.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it doesn't make, it would have made more sense if she.
And the whole reason she was against him was because he killed her friends who were children, right?
Yeah.
Why is she now willing to kill a child? It's kind of like against the, like, whole reason why she started this lifelong pursuit to get Darth Vader.
I feel like the writers were trying to send a message of how trauma begets trauma. People who harm will once harm themselves. But they kind of missed the whole message. It's like her hatred was with Darth Vader for being the person who killed her friends and basically almost killed and tortured her, and Obi-Wan for not preventing that from happening. I get that. I get her hatred towards Obi-Wan. Like, where the hell were you? Mm. I get that. Absolutely get that. Do not get how she would want to treat. I would have expected her to have a soft spot for kids, right? To the point where she's like actually saying, you know what? Leave Leia to me. I'll take care of it. She does that kind of. You kind of see her coming through. And the only thing I would have done differently with Reva is that as a Padawan who was tortured to becoming, you know, Inquisitor, still have that vulnerability of fearing the dark side. She doesn't fear the dark side. She kind of embraces it too quickly, in my opinion.
And she also commits numerous atrocities. Like, she kills a lot of people to get there.
Yeah. Like, if you want to see an Inquisitor done amazingly well, play the Fallen Order game series. The main Inquisitor, I think the ninth sister, Trilla Sudari, like you see her progression as a Padawan. Well, you see her as an Inquisitor first, and then you meet her mentor, her teacher, her master, and she's like saying, oh, she was my ace student. She was caught, she was tortured, and she was became this monster. At the end of the game, I can just say, when she finally gets defeated by the protagonist you're playing, she kind of has this moment of clarity where it's like the dark side of the Force is more terrible than you think.
Yeah.
And as she's saying it, she's starting to feel this chill.
and Darth Vader's just like slowly walking through the mist and appears behind her, that's when you see the terror in her face. And that's when I know, like, that is a really well done Inquisitor arc, because she's still afraid. They didn't show fear in her, in Reva's face, which is like I'm not going to criticize the acting, but I'm going to say the character writing could have been a little bit more organic for her progression.
Yeah, I don't think it was on her acting at all. I think it's just the writing was a bit weak behind her character.
Yeah. Like the actor didn't deserve any of that hatred she got from the, like, it was really weird seeing Disney put out messages saying, you know, we stand against abuse. I'm like saying, oh, she doesn't deserve any of that. That's an actor. It's the same reason why Hayden Christensen got all that shit. For, like, they don't deserve any of this shit. It's the writing and the quality of stuff that they get. They should be focused on making sure that they can make it more, the audience can buy it better.
Fortunately, Star Wars fans can be quite, great.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I was going to say. This is also divided the fans a little bit, this show. Like, I don't think everyone loves it. So it's really hard to satisfy these Star Wars fans. Because I think this show it's not bad. I think it's good. It's there's nothing wrong about it. It's just not amazing, but it's good. So I think if you are a Star Wars fan, I think you'll find things that you like about it.
Yeah. I think the problem with Star Wars, I think every property, like Marvel properties as well, like there's stuff that people don't like. Problem with Star Wars fans is that after they don't like something, they get onto the internet and abuse people about it.
It's hard to keep them satisfied.
Yeah.
They're very vocal.
Like, every fandom has some toxic elements, unfortunately. Like, I've been a Star Wars fan long enough to see a lot of the toxic shit, like, throughout the years.
Yeah.
Like, and here's the thing, right? OG Star Wars fans who loved the original movies hated
the prequels.
But then when the sequels came out, right, the Disney sequels, they were like, this is trash. The prequels are actually good now.
Yeah.
they go back and watch the prequels, and now that they've been memed to tell them back, it's like, prequels are pretty good.
But I think then, it just depends what you grew up with.
And then a new trilogy will come out and they'll be like, this is shit. I like the sequels.
Yeah. So the people who grew up with the sequels, they will probably appreciate them when there's a new trilogy sometime in the future. They'll be like, the sequels were so much better than this.
Yeah.
We grew up with the prequels.
Yes.
We didn't particularly like them when they came out, but I can see, you know, that at least they had one arc.
Yeah. It was written from beginning to end by one writer, by one director.
Yeah.
So, like, I appreciate that same element of the Skywalker saga, right? And then you have rabid Clone Wars fans who are obsessed with the animation series, grew up watching the Clone Wars as kids on Cartoon Network, relive it through Netflix when it got re-released, and then Rebels fans. And, like, I feel like there's no one Star Wars property right now that everyone loves unanimously.
Closest, maybe The Mandalorian
has come the closest because they've done a lot of focus group work to see how to get everyone, like OG fans, new fans, Clone Wars fans, Rebels fans, all in one hat, and that's The Mandalorian. That's why I recommend that to everyone. Like, if you hated what they did to Star Wars, watch this. It goes back to the old techniques, cinematic techniques, old props. They don't use as much CGI. The volume is really, really revolutionary. You know, no more blue screen stuff. With Obi-Wan, I would say, it's divided the fans again because they didn't expect the story to so heavily revolve around someone who was not Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
Like, even I know people who don't like that Leia was introduced and that half the story focuses on Leia. But it's important not to – if they just focused on Ewan McGregor's character and they just had, like, one episode of him in silence in the desert meditating, another episode where he's grieving, another episode where he fights Darth Vader, another episode. If it was just him, it would have been what we expected. That's the problem. And then if it's exactly as you expect it, you're going to be disappointed. You're like, they could have introduced someone else.
There'll be other fans that wouldn't have liked that. So it's hard to satisfy.
Hard to please everyone.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. As a Star Wars fan, I hope we can be a bit better as a whole and make sure we embrace everything.
Yeah.
And not every decision is made to anger fans. You know? A lot of decision is made to actually introduce new elements and explore new storytelling avenues, which is great.
I think most fans, the problem with Star Wars is they have, because there's so much lore, they focus on the lore and they want it to be part of the lore.
Yeah.
I think just forget about all that. Just watch a show on its merit and see how good this show is within itself.
Yeah.
Rather than focusing on, like all the Legends materials that you grew up on. It's like, oh, this is different to what my Legends material was when I was younger. This is shit. It's like, you don't need to go that far. You could like that stuff still.
Yeah.
And, but watch the show for what it is on its merit, essentially. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And like, I always tell people the living example of going against the grain and just doing something completely new in the Star Wars universe, like random new shit that's never been done before. That's what Dave Filoni did with Star Wars Rebels. With Clone Wars as well, but with Rebels, he really went left field. He just created brand new characters, brand new story elements, brought in some of the good callbacks. He brought a lot of the legacy stuff from like Timothy Zahn novels back in the, you know, the 90s that were written to extend the original trilogy but were completely made obsolete when Disney took over. He's bringing that stuff back. And he brought a lot of the original novelizations and EU back. And the fans actually now really love Rebels. There's few people who I know actually watch Rebels and think, oh, this is shit. When you get into it, it's like, oh, crap, there's actually a lot of story exposition here. So trying new things and expanding on new ideas is a good thing eventually. It will help expand what's already there, I guess.
Yeah, well, looking forward to other shows that are coming out. So there's no movies, actually.
There is a Taika Waititi movie, but
that's
probably going to be cancelled now that Thor Love and Thunder came out.
Oh, really?
He hasn't even started the script, right? No. I think they asked him and he's like, oh, I haven't started.
Disney has a huge, huge history of cancelling Star Wars directors after they do one bad movie. So,
I thought Love and Thunder wasn't that bad. It just didn't live up to Ragnarok, I thought.
Yeah, Tucker might be the exception, but Wonder Woman 1984 came out, they cancelled Patty Jenkins' movie. What's that? Colin Trevorrow did some movie and then they cancelled his.
Oh, Colin Trevorrow, yeah. Man. I would have given anything to see his version of episode 9.
They cancelled his episode 9.
D&D from Game of Thrones.
Well, they cancelled their whole trilogy that they were going to do.
That was needed. after
that was justified.
Especially when they basically focused on Star Wars and then sacrificed
their show to do Star Wars and then they lost Star Wars, unfortunately.
Oh, man.
But the only thing that might be still coming out is Taika Waititi's one.
Which has no release date. Apparently it's in development. But in terms of shows coming out, there's Andor, which we talked about briefly in Boba Fett episode. But premiere date, it says here 31st August. I don't know if that's still happening. Is it?
Yeah.
Well, it's coming out soon.
Yeah. Yeah, in about a month, in exactly a month, today's 31st July. So nuts. Looking forward to that. That might be something a little bit different. So Forrest Whitaker is returning. So he was in Rogue One.
Oh, no way. Yeah, he's coming back in the Andor series?
Yeah. So he's cast in it. And Diego Luna, obviously, is back as Andor. 12 episodes for that one, so a bit longer than a normal series. After that, we got Bad Batch Season 2.
Nice. Yes, that should be good. Going to see a return of some good characters.
So at the moment, they've said 28th September of this year. And then Mandalorian Season 3, which is expected in February 2023.
Nice.
And then Ahsoka, which is sometime next year.
Ahsoka. That's going to be huge. Yeah, any Rebels fans listening, that's the series to watch, I reckon.
And then The Acolyte, also next year sometime.
This one I'm not across. Is it based in the High Republic?
That's in the past.
Okay.
Roughly 100 years before The Phantom Menace.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, so not way far back, but just far back enough.
There is a Lando series in development. No release date scheduled for that, but...
Nice. It'll be good to see him back.
I don't think that's confirmed. I think that's rumored.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah. I haven't seen anything official about that. Even that Donald Glover's in it. So, that's rumored.
There's no mention of Donald Glover, but Lando could be recast.
I would like to see a series on Lando. It'd be nice.
There's a Rangers of the New Republic.
That's cancelled.
Is it?
Pretty sure. After, that was meant to be Gina Carano's one.
Gina Carano.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's meant to be Gina Carano. She was headlining that. There's a project they've announced that sounded very much like Rangers, and I feel like they rebranded
it to not have Gina Carano in it.
Yeah. Which is going to be hilarious.
And
no sympathy for her at all.
That's it at the moment in terms of – so just shows and just that one movie. So that's it in terms of –
I think they're leading to a crossover event for the shows, which you would be across this, but I think they're going to have Grand Admiral Thrawn as a big villain and then crossover all the shows to have him face up against them.
Yeah, well, yeah. It was dropped in Mandalorian season 2, his name.
Yes.
So we definitely are expecting to see him in the Ahsoka series, I believe.
Yeah, Ezra Bridges is coming back for Ahsoka.
Oh,
so
that's going to be amazing. Yeah. I'd love to see who...
So last time you said it was...
It is Mina Masood.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh,
yeah.
The same guy who played Aladdin?
Yes. Yeah.
In the Disney... Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. That's all in-house. Nice.
Anything else on... Before we move on, anything else on Obi-Wan?
I would say it's an overall well-delivered package. Maybe not all the contents are there.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well done. Well paid.
But I think they did a good job with it. Yeah.
Do you reckon there'll be season 2?
I reckon there will be. Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
Potentially get Qui-Gon for the full season.
Yeah. They've definitely based Ewan McGregor's look at the in that very last scene when he finally is going on his journey and leaving Mos Eisley.
He's a little less disheveled.
His look is directly based off of issue 21 of the Star Wars comics, where he's actually now going on to his own adventures. So we might see him get up to other stuff. I hope we see more Liam Neeson.
I think they will do a season 2.
Yeah, I think so.
I think if you like the prequels especially, which a lot of my friends do, then you'll probably love this. Revenge of the Sith. If you like Revenge of the Sith, you'll love this.
Yeah. And if you haven't seen Revenge of the Sith, if anyone hasn't seen the prequels, don't be turned off by the memes and stuff. Go and watch them. They're actually good films.
Like, if anything, like, the first two are terrible, in my opinion, but they've still got good parts in it. And the bad parts are hilarious. So I think it's a good watch. I frankly think they're all good watches.
I still think Phantom Menace, because they didn't go full CGI back then. They still use a lot of miniatures practical. And bigatures. Yeah, so there are some. It looks photorealistic.
Yeah.
So when I watch it on like 4K, I'm like, oh, this is bringing back really cool memories of like.
And even just for Darth Maul, I think you should watch that.
Yeah, he's one of the best.
Just for Jar Jar Binks.
Just for Jar Jar Binks.
The whole prequels.
No, I think there's merit in the prequels, definitely. And like the parts that aren't good are hilarious. Like you should watch it with a bunch of friends, the first two, and you'll have a good time.
Yeah.
And if you're doing like a Star Wars marathon, you're watching the OG films, Phantom Menace is like a real breath of fresh air because you actually see proper combat, proper space battles that actually have some stake, which is good. It's good. I reckon get onto that. And Revenge of the Sith, definitely watch that.
Attack of the Clone has hilarious dialogue, like really funny.
Well, Attack of the Clones, we watched that. It was 2002 when it came out.
2002. I remember exactly when we watched it.
Yeah.
And it was like right before we had James Ann or something, like going for like Melbourne High.
Tutoring.
Stuff.
I think it was, that time. I remember very distinctly the 2002 World Cup was happening at the same time this movie came out.
Because
I think the final was like the next week or something.
World Cup.
Yeah, the Soccer World Cup. Yeah. It was in Japan and Korea that time. Brazil won. Brazil beat Germany in the final. Yeah.
Last time they won against Germany.
And last time I won World Cup as well. But I remember that period. But I just found I was like 13 year old back then, and it was just incredibly
hilarious.
I remember the TV, like the TV ads were all centered around like Yoda is finally gonna fight.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Like the TV spots just like show like big Christopher Nolan style like bass music where you see like Yoda letting go of his staff, picking up a lightsaber, and it always is like. And that's it, just cuts, Attack of the Clones.
Yeah.
I actually liked all those movies the first time I watched them, but I was very young when I watched them.
Yeah, Attack of the Clones. I just found, we watched it in the cinema, I found it incredibly boring for like the whole middle part.
Yep.
Where it's just a romantic.
Actually, which is very bad dialogue.
Yeah. I remember exactly why, because Two Towers came out that year as well.
Yes.
And Lord of the Rings always came out during the Christmas release,
whereas
so the Star Wars was around like September, November.
Yes, it was. Yeah, I think it was September.
Yeah. So it was like, this is going to be a nice little filler to watch before we watch Lord of the Rings.
Yeah,
because that was going off around that time. It was so much hype,
which is an incredible segue to what I was going to say next, because the Lord of the Rings show is going to premiere in September. So in preparation for that, we are going to be reviewing the original trilogy.
Oh, we're doing it finally.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, so I thought this would be a good time to do that. This will involve a bit of work because we're going to watch the extended cuts of the movies.
We're doing the extended? Okay.
We'll do one for each movie just so we can cover it. Don't do like a 6-hour episode. So we'll do one for each movie, starting with obviously Fellowship.
Nice.
So we'll do that. Pretty soon. We've got the extended editions on Blu-ray. So we
Is it, when is Rings of Power coming out?
September, first week of September. So okay. we've got this month. We've got August.
Got all this month and next month. Yeah,
we got August.
August basically. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. To get through it, so we'll do that. I was thinking we could do Hobbit as well, but maybe we'll save that for season two of this show or whenever that comes out.
Do you like Hobbit?
I'll be honest. The first film was really well done. It was in the vein of the book. Second and third started getting a little bit too, you could say, Hollywood epic fight style. Yeah. Like it, that's not what the book is.
I agree with that.
It's meant to be like the vein of the first movie, but I think that the studio wanted to make another trilogy, so they pressured Peter Jackson to coming in and doing it. So I don't hold it. It's not, you can't hold it up to the original Lord of the Rings, but it's still an interesting production value take. Like still done by the same studio, so technically there's something to take out of it.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, the way I see, and it's related to Star Wars, the way I see those Hobbit movies are they're like the prequels for me.
Yes,
and the original Lord of the Rings movies are like the original.
Whereas the Hobbit had an over reliance on CGI, whereas the original Lord of the Rings was practical effects.
Practical. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes. It's almost exact parallel. It's almost similar to the way George Lucas turned out as well. Like Peter Jackson, I feel like he almost had too much confidence in himself when he did those Hobbit movies. Like he felt like he could almost do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
And people will watch it.
Well, at that point, it becomes like whatever he says goes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. True. Yeah. I'm looking forward to the reviews. Yeah. I think we've been talking about it for a while, hinting that we'll do a Lord of the Rings review and
say we'll do that. I mean, if you're free, we can do the watch along. Like we'll watch it together.
Oh yeah,
and then we'll record the episode after.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've been meaning to do one for the 20th anniversary. I watched them, but I just didn't do any reviews for it. I was going to do like a whole breakdown on a blog or something, but I thought, you know what?
Yeah.
Let's do a team one. So this should be good.
I guess that brings us to this episode. We kept it to a reasonable time this time. So I think we went through it in decent good amount detail.
Decent amount of detail. Yeah, we didn't go through the traditional order of like episode by episode, which is...
But I think skipped around a little bit. Yeah.
It's all right. If we missed anything massive, let us know. I don't think we did, but a lot of references here and there that
I'm sure there are. Yeah. All right. So if people want to get in touch with us about Obi-Wan and their thoughts about it, how do they go about it?
So we're on all platforms at Cognitive Recalibration, or you can email us at cognitiverecalibration.com. I did this last time as well. cognitiverecalibrationpodcast@gmail.com. That's right.
Yep. Yes. Yeah. 136 episodes and you still don't get it right.
150 is going to be now done. And do you know which platforms allow viewers to leave reviews?
So Spotify and iTunes at the moment. I think there's one other one. I think it's Podbean. That lets you also put reviews. But the main ones for us are iTunes and Spotify. So, if you want to support the podcast, you can just leave us a review on both of those. I think Spotify is just a star rating. So, it's just you just give us 1 to 5 stars. Right. There's no written review. But iTunes, you can also write a review.
Nice.
Yeah. But Spotify is our most popular platform anyway. So, just leave us 5 stars. If you like it, leave us 5 stars and that will help us a lot.
Nice.
Cool. All right. So next week we've got Bullet Train, which we'll be watching the Brad Pitt.
Oh, the Brad Pitt one.
Yeah, nice. Brad Pitt starrer. Watch out for that review. And then we've also got a couple of catch-up reviews that we're going to do for Lightyear, which is coming out on Disney Plus next week.
Yeah, it's coming out soon.
We're going to watch it in the cinema, but they're releasing on Disney Plus in a week, so why bother? So we'll watch that. And Minions Rise of Gru. We'll probably watch it. I will probably watch it.
Yeah. We're going to be dressing up in suits for that one.
Yeah, I was actually going to watch it yesterday because I was a bit bored. I'm like, oh, maybe I'll go watch. I was looking at movies that were out, and the only one that was I kind of want to watch was that.
It's going to be epic.
I've actually seen most of those movies in the cinema. I don't know why. I don't know how it happened, but I've seen most of them.
Very popular because of those minions. Yeah,
yeah.
In China, they go gangbusters. They loved them.
Yeah, remember when we went to China? It was in China, right?
Yeah, they minions loved everywhere. It. Yeah.
Yeah, very popular movie. So we'll probably review that at some stage. But yeah, our main focus in August will be Lord of the Rings. So,
Bullet Train.
Amazing.
We'll do
5 episodes of Bullet Train.
Okay. Well, thanks, Bhaskar. Thanks for coming again.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's absolute pleasure. Love talking about this franchise and Star Wars in general. But thanks for inviting me and always a good discussion. especially when it's involved with you guys. That's good.
Look forward to our Lord of the Rings discussions as well. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Hope you had a good time with this episode. Hope you're all staying safe, and we'll see you in the next one.
See ya.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.